Good morning.
G'day.
I'm a bit nervous. For those who don't know me, I'm Ruben. It's exactly what I hoped wouldn't happen this morning, which we've got a really big, really healthy congregation. of all the weeks for everyone to be here. I am nervous about this. I'm going to talk about me today and what I reckon, what I think. I'm going to speak very freely about, I've called it the short-sighted Christian. I was going to call it the whirlwind inside my head. And really, I'm just talking about what I'm thinking and where I'm at and sort of the circles of questions that sort of go around in my head. And so hopefully maybe some people will find that useful, some of the questions, maybe some people won't. If anything, at the end of it, at least, you know, you'll know me a little bit better. And so it's not answers. I'm not really trying to challenge. I'm just trying to talk about my own questions. So, like, I don't know, maybe by the time I'm done, some of you might have, you know, some things you can tell me back, but I hope I don't upset anybody. I shouldn't do. I think the biggest part of the reason I wanted to speak about this is because I haven't found God yet. I haven't found a relationship. I stopped talking with my hands. I haven't found.
Hands are good.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I can't pray. I haven't got a connection. If I pray aloud, it feels like it's going nowhere. If I try and pray inside my head, it doesn't feel like it's being sucked out. I don't know. I haven't had a really connected experience of God yet. And maybe I won't, maybe I don't need to. I think for, you know, I've had a little bit of a look around, a little bit of a poke around, and I think, well, you know, how much longer am I going to spend, you know, trying to look for like a really obvious sign of God when I may not get one? I had an experience once. I went to our Orthodox church with my friend Val, and I did have an experience where I felt like, kind of inexplicably, I felt like the whole of existence was soaring down around me while I was standing still. It was really amazing, but that was kind of cool. And I thought, oh, maybe, you know, maybe this is going to be like an experience of God. And then it kind of went away, and it was like never really strong enough. Like maybe I was just dizzy that morning or something. So, I haven't got, yeah, like a definite sign or a purpose. So where do I go from there? Is I look at, well, what can I know and what can I do with what I know? So most of the time, what I think is, you know, I look, you know, sort of 3 feet in front of my hands and think, well, what can I do next? What can I do with what I know? What's available to me? And how do I try and do good with that? I got the next thing on my notes here. It says, don't give up, which I think was a bullet point, but it's just kind of encouraging at this point. What I put it down to is as I try and find something to believe or something to do or the next thing to do, the way I question it to myself and the way I justify things to myself is I think, well, if based on this I go on to do something and then later find the initial assumption to be wrong, what good have I done anyway? And if at some stage I find myself to have been wrong or misled or misguided or whatever, and then I look back and I'm like, well, you know, I did no wrong in that, then I feel like I've done okay. So I guess I worry sometimes when people get too focused on the unseen and the intangible, and maybe we can become too focused sometimes on like a heavenly reward or what God wants us to do, or that sort of thing. I was ready to say this, I'm getting scared now. But yeah, like I think sometimes, particularly for me, when I can't find that, you know, that next grab bar to be like, yes, definitely, you know, God said he wants us to do that, so I know that we should do that. That's when I start thinking, okay, well, when we go back, how do I just know that I'm doing good for the sake of being good? And I've got myself confused. I'm sorry. And where's it going to go? That's where I was going to go with that. I was going to talk about trying to do good with our own hands because I had an anecdote. I had an anecdote which was, I've used this one a lot of times for a lot of things. When I was in youth groups when I was younger, to one of our youth leaders to prove, you know, his strong relationship with God, he had this story for us about his favourite parking spot at the shopping centre. And when he was driving in the car on the way to the shopping centre, he would pray that his favourite parking spot would be there. And sometimes it would be there, and he'd be like, oh, thanks, God, you know, my favourite parking spot was there. Sometimes it wasn't there, but he had one that was, like, close and just as good, and that was, like, a little joke with him and God. And I could never work out how, you know, when everyone else who had left to go to the shopping centre before him that day had gone and found whatever park they wanted and parked wherever, how the fabric of the universe somehow bent between the time he prayed and got to the shopping centre. And, you know, as well as it being bizarre, I thought that truly misses the point of this being about getting you a parking space. And sometimes I get too scientific. I mean, I love science. I love the idea that things can be tested against controls and, you know, hypotheses can be supported and we can be really sure of things and really understand things. And I mean, I think it's truly healthy to, like, to be able to pick these things apart and really understand. But sometimes we get, well, I feel, oh, well, you know, if that's so pragmatic and that disproves that, and I reckon that was probably started by this and these justify, and then all these things talk down, it becomes very, very not spiritual or mystical or godly. And I think, well, you know, I think, well, what is the point other than just to assume that we're animals that survive? My partner is she has a degree in anatomy. She's very scientific, very pragmatic, very non-spiritual, very fiercely non-spiritual. I got a Valentine's Day card from her this year with a picture of Charles Darwin on the front, and it says, "I select you naturally," which came from an argument I had. We were having a great debate over dinner one time, and I said, "So what, does that mean you believe that love is an evolutionary construct?" And she's like, "Yes." You know, so when you over pragmatize, you can come to this sort of feeling like, oh, you know, maybe we're just animals with, you know, these these base desires of, you know, we've got to feed, we've got to reproduce, we've got to perpetuate our own survival, which explains a whole lot of things, you know. But I also think that there comes a point where we as humans, we decide not to be base, we decide not to be primitive, and we decide to be something more than that. People always say, oh, but it's human nature to be greedy, it's human nature to be selfish. And I don't think it is, because I see people all the time decide to be more than just these animals who are, you know, who are there to proliferate. And this is where the spirit starts to creep back in, is when I start to think about this thing. My friend Val is really big on morality. The one thing that makes all humans different from all other animals is that they possess this morality, which, you know, whether it comes from, you know, a social need to perpetuate other human lives in order to help perpetuate your own, maybe, or does it come from something more? And this is because I got myself lost again. Where are we?
Take a deep breath,
yeah. Thanks, Jen. So I think that's something that, in spite of all of my cynicism and trying to make things too practical, I believe that more than being base, humans are inherently good somehow, more than just looking out for each other. I believe that humans are capable of being truly altruistic. It's another very cynical thing you hear a lot of the time, is people say there's no true altruistic act. No one ever does anything kind for anyone else, without thinking, you know, somewhere of how that's going to come back and help them. You know, someone was speaking to me last night about karma. He's like, oh, you know, karma's great. You know, if you do good, it comes back to you. And I said, yeah, it's still a selfish motivation to think that you do good because it's going to come back around to you sometimes. So I think this is where I come back to thinking, so if what I believed I found to be wrong, what good have I done anyway? You know, so if you believe that people are inherently just animalistic and, you know, can't be trusted any more than, you know, their own instinct for survival, you know, is that a helpful way to be? You know, I find it very hard to think that I could go around my whole life not trusting anyone I meet. If you believe that all people are bad and out to get you, then you're going to find yourself very lonely. You know, and so another friend of mine, he firmly believed that the world was going to end in December last year. What day was it? Was it the 6th of December? 18th of December? I can't remember. Anyway, when was it? 21st of December last year. A very good friend of mine was going to ascend into pure energy. And after that date, he was only going to exist to me in my perception of him. Which is fine to think that. I mean, that's cool. Whatever. But when I was arguing with him, of course, who am I to say that he is wrong to think that? You know, there's things he's read that, you know, lead him to believe that, you know, he's going to ascend into pure energy on the 21st of December 2012. He didn't. But What worried me about that was not that he believed in, you know, something so separate to my, you know, my little Christian set of beliefs, that, you know, it wasn't the sort of pagan spirituality of it that upset me. I thought, well, if you're going to live out this whole year believing the world is going to end, then what are you going to do? You know, if you truly believe that the whole world only has, you know, I think we had 8 months left or something at this time, then, you know, I know if I believe that, then I wouldn't feel like there was any point to doing anything. Which makes me think that it's not a constructive thing to base on your own. Again, you know, if I'm wrong, what good have I done? For all I'm concerned, for all I know, like, the world could end tomorrow, but I don't know that, and I can't know that, so I may as well carry on acting as if the world's going to last forever, and that what I do is going to make a difference, because then, hey, if we are here tomorrow, maybe it's a little bit better. So, I think... So the things I do firmly believe, outside of all the questions and the whirlwinds and, you know, whether any of it is worthwhile or not, I believe that people are, in their nature at the basis, good. I believe that people are born with the potential of good in them. I believe that it's worth, for some reason, for some greater purpose, that it is worth being good and trying to be good. And I believe that we can learn to be better, which is a big part of why I'm here. When I can't find God, and then when I think, oh, well, I'll put that down and I won't furiously search for a sign of God anymore, that's why I'm still here, is because on their own, I find that the teachings of Christ are, you know, fundamentally resound with what my original little ticker, what, you know, tells me, oh, that sounds pretty good, that sounds kind of right, you know, that sounds good. Sort of really resonates with that. And then I find that when I read and, you know, practice and learn and study them and discuss them with these people here, I get better at being like what that thought it should be, and, you know, what the teachings of Christ teach me to be. So I think that is what I was coming around to all the way along, is that I get very confused about all sorts of things, but at the end of the day, I feel that there is this good that we can find. Because I believe that when I find God, God is not just going to be for us Christians in this room. And that's the thing that I really need to reconcile, is that, you know, is that all people of all faiths are going to be loved and forgiven and receive the same reward, be it heavenly or actually nothing at all, as any of the rest of us, so long as we're good. And I don't mean good by like a Western, like a specifically Western moral standard. What I'm hoping to find one day in my study is what is true and what is universally right and good for everyone. And I think hopefully maybe I'm on the right track. And then, you know, and this is where the spirit starts to sort of creep back in. I mean, because Jesus was a pretty spiritual guy, and, you know, amongst, like, all his practical teachings, which seem pretty good, you know, he was pretty switched on to this God guy. So I think, you know, this is where it starts to creep back in for me, because as much as I try and pragmatize everything to, you know, I only know what I can do and see and feel and touch in front of me, and, you know, I believe that I can, you know,
pretty well scientifically justify everything that happens. You know, why do bad things happen to good people is because, you know, things happen in this world which is made up of elements which we can see working against each other. But So when I pragmatize it down and go, okay, we can only do what we can see and know, and then I think, and then we have to do the best I can. And then this is where I start to get confused again. Oh, okay, so if it's all black and white in front of me, things I can physically do, people, you know, who need our help, in our discussion this week, you know, Peter, you suggested that, you know, are we ready to sell our possessions and go help those less fortunate than us? And it's really hard to do. It's like, why can't we take the next step? And this is where I get really confused with what I'm doing with myself, is because I have this thing I do. I'm a musician, and I play this loud, raucous, not necessarily always uplifting, to some people, violent sounding music, and it's the only thing I know to do, you know? And I'm so sure of this need to do it. Every day I feel like I'm screaming in a box, and I have to make this sound for people to hear, and I can't work out what good it does, because it doesn't have a positive message, you know. It's not practically life-changing. It's not fundraising for, you know, a greater cause. And it, you know, but I know so firmly that I have to do it. It's in me, and I kind of have to. And again, this is where the spirit creeps back in. I thought, how can I be made with this sound in me, that the only purpose for it I can figure out is for it to speak to other people who feel like me, and to create this, you know, this personal value for people who do feel like me, and for people who do feel as alienated as me, for us to have this outlet and this sound, like all the records I listen to. I want to give that back to other people. And it's this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm like, why do I have that if there's not a spirit and a soul somewhere that, you know, can cry out for these beauties? Because what I do musically is not an evolutionary construct. You can't. It doesn't fit into Darwin's theory of evolution. So that is the whirlwind of questions I asked myself, the whirlwind of questions I apparently couldn't quite even articulate in time. That's where I'm at. I'm gonna finish with a quote which is only semi-related, from Evel Knievel. Does everyone know who Evel Knievel is? Yeah. For those who don't know, Evel Knievel was a stuntman who had his heyday in the 60s. He wasn't a very good stuntman. He had a career which involved a series of public failures, which to come back from, he felt like he had to attempt something bigger, which led to bigger and bigger failures. He was kind of like a live performance snuff film. I read an interview him with the other day, which he did for Esquire magazine, which is not a salubrious publication, but this is a hilarious and hilarious interview with Evel Knievel, where he says some hideous things, but then he says this one thing which I actually thought was beautiful. He says, "I think all of these so-called born-again Christians should ask their preachers why they don't hand out organ donor cards. If you've donated a kidney or a heart or an eye or whatever to your fellow man to keep him alive, you couldn't be closer to God than that." I thought, That's pretty good from Evel Knievel. So that's these bits wrapped up. Does anyone want to talk about it? Ask me something? Tell me something?
Ruben, I feel like I've been really blessed to hear your utter frank honesty. It is a burden to be an artist to be the creative urge, because part of that is telling the truth, which includes the pain. So that's part of what you're telling it, and you just have to do that. You can't not do it. I just want to thank you for your honesty and to encourage you to continue in your journey.
Thanks, man.
Cool, brother.
I think it was, I was a little bit scared to get up and sort of say this stuff to a congregation. I'm like, oh, how far can I go? I mean, like, I know we're kind of cool with everything, but does that mean I can actually say it? I guess it's kind of inevitable. I've been here for a while. I've sort of grown up around these people. I guess it's where it's formed. But I mean, it's why I'm so happy being here, is that I feel that what we do is something of, I feel us to be very exploratory, you know, and very questioning, and I like the way we're sort of constantly shape-shifting and changing and reluctant to put anything down on paper, because I think, you know, that saves us from being too dogmatic. And I know there are a lot of people who wouldn't come to church because they have this idea of religion that's going to be something that's going to tell them about something and about them or what they... they think it's going to, you know, take over in this very controlling, very dogmatic way. And when I explain to them how openly we discuss things here, they're like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. Maybe I'll come down sometime. I think, yeah, I'm really grateful that we can be on a search together. Yes, Trish, sorry.
Following up that, Ruben, been watching some shows on SBS on science lately.
Yeah.
It really blown me away. In that the message I've got from them is, from where we sit now, truth seems obvious.
Mm.
But these scientists who explore the limits come up with the most amazing things that we've later on find are true, but the society of the day usually objects to very strongly on the basis that, of course, it's not true, like the sort of the flat earth society type thing. Of course it is flat, you can see it's flat.
Yeah.
But it's not. And that has taught me that I can't really trust what I know, because there's so much more that I don't know. And I think that attitude of always looking at the edges and saying, well, maybe we're wrong, maybe it's something different, is a very healthy attitude that is the seeds of growth. And I just keep reminding myself, God is infinite, but we only know a tiny little scrap of God.
Goes beyond the limits of an individual understanding. It like strikes me that the scientific and the spiritual journey are one and the same. The true scientist stands on the edge of the known and looks into the unknown, and the spiritual journey takes me into the same place. And for me, as I get grey hair, and I guess I'm about the same age as you now, but as I get grey hair, my journey is not one towards building stronger walls around my certainty, but learning to live more graciously with the lack of certainty. And just the last thing I'll say is, I think what you've done this morning is like a confession in the true sense, which the literal meaning of confession is to conform the words that come out of your mouth to who you are inside, and for anybody to be with us and to allow those words to conform to what's in their heart, I think is a real gift. So thank you.
Thank you. I think particularly the sort of the alignment of like the spiritual search with the, you know, scientific search. I think that, I don't know, I never find it hard to reconcile the two, because I see there being an easy place for both. What is it, Peter? For this reason I've come to speak the truth, and everyone on the side of truth listens to me?
Yes.
Yeah, is that it? Yeah. I see that as so encouraging for someone like myself, you know, as a member of a church with a scientist partner who won't get out of bed on Sunday mornings, that it's not a conflict. It's that we are both coming to discover the whole truth, you know, and I don't believe that the Christian truth is a closed off truth exclusive of the rest of the world's truth. Ben. Yeah.
Having any revelation where there's not going to be any dancing. Well, I'm not going to have any religion where there's not going to be any dancing. Sorry, that just. But you know, I just think that what you do.